Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
On this episode of Narcissist Apocalypse, we talk with an abuse survivor named Blue, and Blue is married to a controlling Mr. Right. It's a story of slow builds, being good enough, future faking, identity erosion, and going no contact for good. Welcome to Narcissist Apocalypse, everyone. I am Brandon Chadwick, and with me today, we have Blue. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for asking, and thank you for being here. And if you want to be a guest like Blue is today, please do go to our website at narcissistapocalypse.com. Top of the page, there's a button that says guest form. When you click on that button, it takes you to our guest form page. And there you can read all of our instructions. And then either send us an email at narcissistapocalypse@gmail.com or fill out our guest form and press the submit button. And please do send it in the format that we ask for. And today's episode has a content warning, as we do graphically discuss physical abuse on a couple of occasions and sexual coercion in this episode. So that is your content warning for today. And today we're going to hear Blue's story, and Blue's story is a slow build story, the frog in the boiling pot. Things take time to progress or devolve, so you don't necessarily recognize things as abuse, and then you're just knee deep in it. So a big thank you to Blue for being here with us today. And now I'm going to get out of my way and your way. Blue, the floor is now yours.
So I've actually been listening to you, I would say off and on, since maybe about this time last year. And I feel like your podcast and another one called Love and Abuse actually really helped me. Kind of when I started to realize what was really going on, I kind of started looking for like resources at the advice of like my therapist, and just because I'm a very resourceful person. So I try to look for any information I can on something. So yeah, so I figured after I got through the worst of my experience, I would contact you and talk a little bit to see if it might help someone else. So, I mean, I come from like, you know, a typical middle class family. You know, it's me, my parents, very like nuclear family, siblings. You know, life was pretty normal. We were like a single income family. So like my mom was a stay-at-home mom. My dad worked. You know, he wasn't really home a lot. So it was really like my mom kind of ruled the roost in a way. You know, she handled everything like finances, kids, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like my dad brought in the money, my mom took care of the rest. So if anything, I feel like it was more matriarchal in a way. But yeah, I mean, belief system wise, I guess it's like, you know, you grow up, you get married, you buy a house, you get a job, you go to college, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like you're supposed to have kids, you know, there's kind of like a template you're supposed to follow. You know, I was always, I think, kind of almost like a perfectionist, like people pleaser. Growing up, I was definitely like more like rebellious, normal, like typical, like teenager kind of stuff with my family, going back and forth, just trying to figure things out for myself. But I think I was also very like insecure. So I was always looking for like external validation. And like, I think anytime I would get some kind of praise, like I just held on to it. Like that's what I was looking for, whether it was from like my family or a guy I was interested in, or from like a teacher or a boss or anything like that. So I was always like kind of like aiming to please in a way. I think it was just growing up, just how my family like ran things. Like, I think it was like, they were very nitpicky in some ways. And it was like, you know, always kind of like walking on eggshells sometimes, always wondering if you're doing something right, or like a lot of conflict around like trying to get me in line. And, you know, when I wouldn't obey, it just, you know, kind of made things worse. I know my parents definitely wanted the best for me, and like they did the best they could and what they thought was right. But I think in some ways it definitely impacted my self-esteem and how I went about growing up and, you know, into my adult life, like, just always like putting like internal pressure on myself, even if it wasn't external anymore. So like, I think it definitely carried over into like perfectionism and people pleasing and stuff like that growing. I mean, I definitely think I still retained like my sense of individuality, even though I might feel insecure. Like, I've definitely always still like stuck to my guns. I've always been very stubborn. I always like stood up for myself. You know, I'll call people out if they upset me or something, you know, kind of develop some grit and getting through some things. I mean, they've always been very supportive of me. Like, our relationship is great now. You know, I've always been very close to like them and my brother and my sister. I mean, yeah, there's definitely some negatives, but also a lot of like positives that I still got from my parents. So
we've discussed your childhood here, some issues that could present themselves. What are your beliefs in relationships specifically?
I guess, like, you know, they take work, like you're supposed to try to work everything out, you know, like you don't just throw it away at the first sign of trouble, like, you know, stuff like that, especially with like marriage. Divorce is like the worst thing you could do in a way. Relationships and like marriage take hard work, like all that kind of stuff. Like, it's not always, you know, rainbows and butterflies and everything, but like, you know, if you love each other enough, you can work anything out. Like, stuff like that.
So we're about to talk about your relationship that you were in, the abusive relationship. And I just want to point out to everyone that, you know, we've talked previously, we did a pre-call. And I think the biggest thing here, we always hear the story of the frog in the boiling pot. And there's slow builds, and yours was a slow build, and it really, really was like a slow kind of build. So there are lots of steps in this kind of slow building that happens to you. For people that have never been through abuse or are listening to this, when it comes to something like this, by the time that heat is piping hot, you don't even realize that it's even happened yet. And that's kind of the story that people are going to hear today with what happened to you. So, you know, I've been focusing on all of the things that someone can take advantage of, but we also want to point out here that, you know, within the context of a relationship, whether you have issues that are going on beforehand or not that can be taken advantage of, you know, a slow build story is one of the ways where someone can really sneak up on you and, you know, just devastate your life. So with that being said, I'm going to say, how did you meet this person, and tell us the beginning of this story?
Yeah. Actually I met him not too long after I got out of a previous not so great relationship that was a mess for different reasons. So I was kind of coming off of like a pretty bad breakup already. And, you know, I met him through one of the dating apps, and he just came on very strong right away. You know, told me I was beautiful. He was so interested in with me, like, wanted to know everything about me. He wanted to go on a date, like, basically within a couple of days of us just like going back and forth on an app, sent me flowers like a couple days after our first date. And then he just wanted to see me all the time. Like whenever he had free time, like he wanted to see me. I think it was just like, he was just so different from the person I was with before him that I was like, this is amazing. Like, you know, total opposite, like, you know, just trying to like really win me over, showering me with like gifts and praise and everything, giving me all of his free time, just like, really moving things along. Like when he met my parents, he brought my mom flowers and was like really trying to like brown nose her basically. So it was just, it was such like a shock to me in like a good way that I was like, this is great. Like what else could I ask for basically? And that's kind of what, you know.
So with everything that was said, what else did you like about him? How did you perceive him at the time? How did he want to be seen? And like, what was he showing? And then also in hindsight, what is the reality of that person? You know, which we'll get into more detail after, but, you know, what were they hiding?
Yeah. So like, I mean, I think at least at first he was definitely trying to come off of this very like secure, like confident kind of guy, a people person, very outgoing. You know, he made it very clear very early on that he has a big family and they're all very close, which I liked. My family isn't exactly like super close to like my extended family. So like, I wasn't used to that. And I thought it was nice because like meeting his family and everything, like everyone was so welcoming, so friendly, so open with me right away. And he just came across as very like confident, very easygoing in a way. I think he was trying to like just show his best qualities at first. And it was just like all at once before I can even, you know, realize what was going on, essentially.
And you mentioned his family, and we'll get into more detail about his family later. But you mentioned, oh, they're so welcoming. How do you, when you think of like that first image of seeing them and meeting them and you're thinking like, oh, this is a great welcoming family. What is your feeling knowing now that that is not true about all of them? Like, are you, did it scare you? Does it freak you out?
A little bit. Honestly, like knowing what I know now, like if I had the opportunity, like I would warn someone before they get involved, because yeah, like being in a relationship with him is being in a relationship with the rest of his family, especially about his mom. Because it's like, yeah, when you're in a relationship with him, you're kind of in a relationship with them in a way. And as I found out later on, if there's any kind of issues and they get involved, then it's not good. It's not good to have them on your bad side. So it's almost like, you know, a Jekyll and Hyde kind of thing where it's like, you know, if you're on their good side, it's great. If you're on their bad side, then it's not good. It's not good for you. It's kind of like, you know, the horde comes in.
So you meet them. I assume, start moving fast.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what happens from here, and how long does like this good time last until, you know, the slow build and the first signs of something start to take place?
He was already looking for a house when we met, but he ended up actually buying a house by himself within a couple of months of us dating. And he asked me to move in with him. So I moved in with him after maybe like 3 or 4 months of being together. You know, we're like, okay, we're going to play house. Like, what are we going to, you know, what kind of pillows are we going to buy? Helping him decorate it and everything. You know, it was like really exciting. And, you know, everything was great. You know, we're kind of just still kind of getting to know each other. But like, you know, we also got to see each other every day. So we're spending even more time together. Yeah, everything was great until maybe like 6 months in. We got a puppy together. It was actually a gift from his parents. And just thinking back to that period, there were things that happened after we got that dog together, and maybe after about 6 months of us living together, where there were like red flags coming out that I just totally just ignored, because I was like, we're living together. I want everything to be okay. We got this dog together. Like, everything's fine. I think it was about maybe 6 months in that something happened, and he just got really like frustrated with me and told me how he feels like he has to handle everything. I don't help him with something. Like, it's just, you know, it kind of started, it set the scene for making me feel like I wasn't doing enough. And I just got so upset about it, because I was just like, oh my God, like, I'm living with this guy and I'm not doing enough. Like, I have to do something. Like, I have to do more. You know, really freaked me out. But like, I just immediately thought, like, I'm doing something wrong. I have to fix it, instead of thinking more like, well, why is he saying that? Am I really not doing enough? Like, you know, not like questioning it more. I mean, like, there was like little things that happened within like that first year that I could say were like red flags that I just totally disregarded, because I was so kind of like desperate, and like, I wanted it to work. I wanted to like prove I was a good girlfriend, or, you know, prove that, like, you know, we can handle having this puppy together, prove that, like, you know, we can live together and like, we're fine and everything. And like, this was also the time period where he started talking about getting married and, you know, maybe having a kid together one day, maybe buying a house together one day. So it was kind of like, as soon as like something came up that was like a red flag, it would go away, because he would start talking about all these other great things. And then it would kind of like distract me and be like, okay, well, everything must be okay, because he's still talking about this. Like getting married and everything.
So within the context of being nitpicked a lot about not doing enough and you conforming to it, part of erasing your memory about it is to do future faking, because if this person is planning this future with me, obviously these things aren't like a big deal. So in some kind of way, the future faking is helping you minimize what is actually going on. So you're minimizing your own experience while they're minimizing you. You know, it's an interesting kind of cycle of how that future faking goes into not just extending the relationship, but with you, it really starts to do this erasing and a self-minimization, or like a self-gaslighting in a lot of way.
Yeah. And even during this time period, like from now until like later on, when I really started to catch on that like something was wrong, like anytime I was like upset about something or whatever, like he also seemed a lot more patient with me and a lot more like understanding. I don't think we really like fought too much, honestly, but like he also like didn't minimize my feelings as much, I don't think. It just seems like, yeah, there was like a big shift between how it started out and then how it ended, with how he regarded how I felt about things. And that's another thing, like thinking back, is like, you know, I don't realize till after the fact. And then I would say after about a year, we got engaged. You know, he planned out this whole big thing. His family was involved. You know, I was ecstatic. We planned out the whole wedding within like a month, basically, like had all the major stuff done. And then COVID hit. And I think when COVID hit, that's after we got engaged, it was another like escalation point, I'd say. And like more things started to come out. When COVID hit, like I got temporarily laid off because my job wasn't considered essential. So we got shut down for a few months, and his job was considered essential. So he still got to go to work every day. So like, you know, there was nothing to do. Like I just sat around with my dog all day, and the only thing I could do was go take him for walks, or I could go running or work out in the house or watch TV. Like there was nothing else to do. And after maybe a month of that, I remember one day he came home and I don't know how it started exactly, but he kind of started telling me how he feels like I'm not really doing anything. Like I'm being kind of lazy. Like, why aren't I doing more? Just starting to like nitpick at me even more. In the back of my head, I'm just like, what do you want me to do? Like, I can only clean the house so many times. I was just like, I was like kind of dumbfounded because I'm just like, what do you expect from me? Like it's COVID, it's lockdown. You can't do anything. I can't go to work like you can. So it's like, you at least get to leave the house. But then I was kind of just like, maybe I am being kind of lazy. Maybe I should be doing more, even though I really didn't even know what it was, honestly. And like, he couldn't even really give me an answer. But I kind of just brushed it off and I was like, I don't know. It's a weird time. Like, then, you know, we just like go about, like everything starts opening up again. I get to go back to work. We start to be able to like plan the wedding a little more, get like the smaller details done. You know, the nitpicking is still going on. Like, I just remember he'd kind of, if I was doing something, even if it was just like folding laundry, he would be like, why are you doing it that way? Like, you know, why are you doing it that way? Why don't you do it my way? Or how I would like clean something. Like he'd be like, you're not doing that enough, or something, like little things. Like, it's just like, I felt like I was like under a microscope to a point.
So I'd like to point out here for everyone that you're now probably what, like a year and a half in here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A year and a half in. And, you know, everyone will probably listen to this and start saying, well, they're nitpicking. This isn't abuse maybe yet, or what people think is abuse. But what is happening here, because this is a slow build, is this is a year and a half of your confidence, or your sense of self in is being eroded with this now, like starting off slow, picking up a little bit more, picking up a little bit more, picking up a little bit more. And your doubt in yourself has been created, you know, throughout this process. So a year and a half in now, and you're, you know, your thoughts of, am I doing this correctly? Am I, and maybe my competency in a big way has really been worked on at a slow, gradual pace that has picked up. So it's really set a stage and all of these seeds here to eventually do more. It's just that, you know, sometimes when you're dealing with abuse, you know, if you're dealing with physical abuse or something like that, like these things can happen really quick and you're in it. And like, you don't know at all you're in it. You know that there's something wrong, but it's not like you're going to say, I'm being abused right now. But the stage is being set for more in this whole entire process.
Yeah. You know, up to that point, he would kind of like make these little jokes saying like, what would you do without me? Like before I met him, when I was with the guy before him, like I lived in like a little apartment, you know, I didn't have a ton of furniture. Like we weren't making a lot of money. It was our first apartment together. And he would kind of like make fun of that in a way, be like, you know, look at what you have now because you met me. Like you're in this house now with me. You have a dog now. Like you didn't have any of that before me. Kind of like making like jokes about it, but also kind of setting the scene where it's like, you wouldn't have this without me. Like, what would you do without me? Kind of almost like making me feel like bad, you know, like I'm being vulnerable and telling him like what I came from. And he's like, how did you live like that? Like your life is so much better now because of me, essentially. And that continued on all the way through.
So eventually you and him buy a house. He sells his house and then you buy a house together. And, you know, once you are now in a mutual mortgage partners at this point, it becomes tougher to leave. So things have already happened. And now, you know, when it was his place and only his place, easier to leave. Now you're both involved in this home, makes it tougher to leave. and you're engaged at this point, and then, you know, you have your bridal shower, and this becomes a, you know, a big thing. So tell us about what happens at the bridal shower.
God, it's like, you know, thinking back to it, it was so, so stupid, like how it like went about and like how big of a deal it came into. And this was like my first glimpse into the bad side of his family and like getting on their bad side. And yeah, so it was like, we just moved into the house. I was really stressed out because like there was still stuff in the house that the previous owner left that we agreed to keep, whether we were going to sell it or we were going to give it to someone that wanted it. I was trying to get stuff out of the house that we didn't need. But unbeknownst to me at the time, his family was hosting my bridal shower as a surprise, and they were getting stuff out of their house to make room. And for whatever reason, it had to go into our house. And I just got really upset one day. Like, I was so stressed. I was like, I don't understand why you're bringing all this stuff in. We're trying to get rid of stuff. Like, why us? Like, why aren't they taking whatever they said they would? It just turned into this whole big thing. It got back to his parents. You know, his parents were really angry with me, saying like they were doing so much for me and this is how I react to what they were doing for me. They were going to throw me this party. You know, he started telling me how I was so ungrateful and I was so selfish and, you know, I overreacted and they were just trying to do something nice for me. And I'm kind of just like I was so confused. I was like, how was I supposed to know that though? Like, I'm not a mind reader. And it's just like, you know, I was in the wrong. This was my fault. I ruined my bridal shower for myself. I ruined the surprise. You know, everyone was trying to do something nice for me. And then it was just like, you know, his mom was pissed off at me for a while. Like, his whole family was all mad at me. He just totally took their side. And I was kind of like, what the hell? Like, I don't even know how to feel about this right now. I mean, it already happened. Like, what am I going to do now? I'm just going to have to like make nice and apologize. And, you know, we're getting married. Like, we have a house together. Like, what am I going to do? Like, I don't know. Maybe I did overreact. Like, maybe I am wrong. I don't know. But like, I'm just going to have to like, just make nice, like make it up to them, like apologize, make amends, whatever, because we're getting married in like 6 months. So I don't really have much of a choice. And then like, you know, we kind of get past it. Like, time goes on, we get another dog together. The wedding is getting closer, but I'm also getting more anxious because it's still during COVID. I'm so worried about people getting sick, just wedding stress in general, but also because of COVID. And one day I'm like talking about it to him and he just snaps. Like, we were like cooking dinner together or something. And he like drops the pan of whatever was in the food. And for the food that was like on the pan, he just drops it. It goes all over the floor. He starts like yelling at me, saying like, I'm making the wedding a nightmare. He just wants it to be over. I just felt like, you know, that was the first time, one of the first times that he really like minimized how I felt, because I'm just like, he knows that I'm like an anxious person in general. And like, I just get very worked up over things sometimes. And he just couldn't handle it. And, you know, just the way that he reacted to it just made me feel awful. And I was like, does he not want to get married anymore? Like, why are we even getting married if he doesn't even care about it now? Like, he just wants it to be over. You know, besides just the whole thing that happened around the shower, like just that in of itself, I'm just like, what do I do? Like, we're only a couple months away and we have this whole wedding planned out. But I guess it was like the sunk cost fallacy. Like, we had two dogs together. We had been engaged for like we'd been together for like 2 years at that point. We had a house together. Like, I'm just like, what do I do? Like, I can't call it off. You know, eventually we moved past it. I mean, I was still like really stressed out, but like, I was more hesitant to talk to him about it. Cause I'm just like, I don't have a choice. Like, I have to do this. So yeah, I mean, we get married and the wedding goes perfectly fine. You know, it was still a really good day, but even maybe a couple months later, like, he still kind of said, like, he just couldn't wait for it to be over. And that just made me feel awful. But yeah, I mean, up until this point and, you know, not long after we got married, like the nitpicking was still going on. He was getting less and less patient with me as far as like when I would bring something up that would bother me. Like, you know, our fights, even though there still weren't a ton, like they started to seem a little more intense. And it just seemed like not too long after we got married, that's when I really started to feel like something was wrong. Like, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it's like, maybe I just started to catch on to things a little more, but just the nitpicking and the fighting and like how he would talk to me, it just seemed like I could never do anything right. And, you know, maybe after 3 or 4 months of us being married, like I kind of tried to talk to him about it. And I was like, you know, I just feel like I can't do anything right. Like, I can't make you happy. Like, I don't know what to do. And he just got really defensive and said, like, you know, I've told you what I wanted you to do. Like, you just need to figure it out. Like, I can't tell you what to do. You have to figure it out on yourself. Like, you should know how to make me happy. And I just felt so defeated because I knew it wasn't right. Like, I'm like, that's not how this is supposed to go. Like, you're supposed to communicate to me about what you want from me. And like, I can't read your mind. Like, anytime I would start like cleaning the house, I would be waiting for him to say something to me about how I'm doing it. Like I said before, like folding laundry. Anytime I would fold laundry in front of him, he'd always like question why I'm doing it the way I'm doing it, or like, I'm not doing it right, or something.
So he's become a real Mr. Right on the Lundy Bancroft list of abusers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, he, you know, everything has to be his way. He's smarter. He knows how to do everything. Your life would, you know, probably go much better if you listen to him. Mm-hmm. type of thing. And he's also a product of his own family, where his mom was the person who was like that in his family, and he just becomes a lot like her. So you're dealing with this person who has now really ramped up all of this nitpicking and tearing you down in a lot of ways, and you've conformed to everything, and you're overthinking now a lot, and you're anxious even more, and you're hypervigilant, and you're thinking of, oh, the ways he's going to criticize you now, instead of like, oh, he's criticized me, and then you're kind of going to think about it. You're now anticipating, you know, the criticism. So, you know, this has been, again, as I've mentioned before, a slow build to get to this point. But now you're in it. You're married. You have the house together. Two pets together, two dogs. Like, you're in it. And you brought up before the sunk cost fallacy. So that plays part of it. But also, as we've heard, you also think you're the problem in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And that this is on you. So, you know, you're going through all of this to this point, and you're in a bad spot. Like, you know, because you think it's hard, like with all these things now, like you're almost fully in the sense of the only other thing that could really like make it like full in is if you have a child.
Yes.
So, you know, year one, you know, your process of what's kind of going on here, you know, we talked before where you said like you thought, okay, marriage is hard, you know, so I think that becomes like a big thing. Like, marriage is a difficult thing. So kind of go through, you know, year one, that kind of being a big thing that's kind of keeping you around here. And, you know, what are kind of the things that happen in this first year of marriage after this that are furthering the abuse?
So, I mean, that continues on, you know, starts to minimize how I feel about things a lot more, kind of blowing them off. Just like, if he knows I'm upset about something, he basically just tells me I'm just wrong or I'm overreacting. If I try to bring something up to him, you know, starts to kind of go to like low blows or my therapist liked to call it, like, you know, the kitchen sink. Like, he would start bringing up things that happened a year or so ago about, like, well, you did this, you know, on this day or something like that. It was like anything you ever did wrong to him, he could bring up and would make an issue of it if you ever brought something up to him. He started to bring up how, like, I've been in therapy off and on since I was, like, in high school. And, you know, I take medication, and he would start bringing that up to me, be like, well, you're the one that's in therapy. Like, you're just, you know, you're overreacting. It's just, you're just being anxious or whatever. Putting the blame back onto me, be like, oh, well, it's just you. And that really started to ramp up within, like, the first year, where it's just like, it always came back onto me. And, like, I really thought, like, maybe it is just me. Like, maybe I do need to just do better. Like, maybe I need to try to be less anxious. I don't know. Like, I was trying to, like, rack my brain at, like, what else I could possibly do to try to make him happy. And, you know, like, there was, like, little things, like, things that came up with the house. Like, we had to put an insurance claim in. And, you know, he was complaining that I wasn't helping him enough with that. So I offered to contact the insurance agent and kind of, like, be his contact on things while he dealt with some other things. And I had to, like, send him an email. And it's, like, it's so ridiculous now that I think about it. But, like, all I had to do was just send him some email with something from one of the contractors we were using to show what the problem was, something along those lines. And, you know, I copied him on the email. I sent it over to the claims adjuster. And, like, almost immediately he calls me and starts yelling at me, saying I did it wrong somehow. Like, I didn't send him the email in the right format or something along those lines. And I was just like, I don't even know what you mean. Like, what did I do wrong? Like, I don't even understand. And he pointed out this, like, little thing that he said I shouldn't have included. And I'm just like, I don't think the adjuster is really going to care about that. He just wants this attachment. And, like, he just, you know, just went into me saying how I did it wrong. He should have just did it. Like, I can't handle anything. Like, he should just do everything by himself. And I was just, like, dumbfounded. I'm just like, all I did was just send an email. Like, it's not rocket science. I don't think I did it wrong. And then maybe, like, a few minutes later, he's like, okay, maybe it's not that big of a deal. But, like, didn't apologize to me, nothing. Just like, oh, okay. Like, maybe you didn't do it wrong. But it was just the way that he reacted to it initially that I'm kind of just like, why should I ever help you with anything again if this is how it's going to be every time I do something for you and I'm trying to help? So it just comes back to basically, like, everything has to be done his way. If it's not done his way, it's wrong. And then, like, you know, the rest of the year goes by, we get past that. You know, some fights happen here and there where it's just, I feel like he's just, it's more nitpicking, more minimizing, you know? So that's year one.
So then eventually you try to get pregnant. So what's the thought process when this comes up? You know, everything's not going the greatest and you feel that something's wrong. So how do you come to this agreement to, like, this, that you're going to do this? And then, you know, what happens in the process of this? Because this, you know, starts to show at this point, you know, the abuse becomes, changes a little bit.
Yes. So even before we got engaged, like, he made it very clear, like, he's always wanted kids. And I made it clear to him that I was always kind of on the fence, but, like, I would think about it maybe eventually, like, you know, maybe I would come around to it. And then after we get married, you know, he made it very clear very early on, he kind of wanted to start trying right away. And I was like, no, I don't want to, like, I kind of want to wait a little bit. So he compromised on that. But then once a year hit, I was kind of like, well, you know, maybe things really aren't that bad. Like, you know, this is what's going to make him happy. I know he really wants one. Like, you know, maybe it can't be too bad. I'll just see how maybe just, like, one goes. And we're kind of just like, okay, let's just see what happens. And I feel like that just adds more stress to it in a way, because it's just like, okay, like, this is what he wants. And time goes on and nothing happens.
So the person that you started dating to this person now who you're married to, mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, you know, this slow build has occurred, and now you're dealing with someone who's has a short fuse, a lot shorter than when it began. So they've changed as you've changed as well. And again, you're in the middle of all of this, and it's hard to see. Even when you're seeing things, it's hard to see. And then an incident happens that doesn't involve you, but it involves his brother and his brother's wife. And this is a moment for you where you get to see what the family is really like and mm-hmm. how everything works. And it is a big eye-opener for you as, you know, seeing what that person's, that brother's wife is experiencing, and connections for you start, like, this is a big aha moment. So take people through this.
Yeah. Oh, I would love to know her side of things, honestly, because she's known them way longer than I have. And so one night, you know, really late at night, he gets this call, and he and his family go over to his brother's place. They're in this big fight. Apparently her family's there too. They're both accusing each other of stuff. I'm only hearing their side of things. They also have a child together. So like, that's also a very big thing that they were fighting over. You know, he gets home really early in the morning, kind of telling me what happened. You know, they separated for like the night or something, saying like, oh, she's accusing him of this, but he's saying she does this. So it's just like a very big, like back and forth, some very heated arguments going on. So the next day I'm kind of like hearing their side of things, of like what went down, like, and I start looking up things because they were telling me like, oh, well, she does this to him and this, this, and this, and this. So I'm like, okay, well, that kind of sounds abusive. Like, I'm going to look this up because I just want to get an idea. And I come across this article about emotional abuse, and I start reading through it, and it kind of like has a few bullet points saying like, you know, this is what it might look like. And I start reading through it, and I'm like, oh, this sounds kind of familiar. And I'm just like, kind of like, oh my God, but also like in denial. Cause it's just like, oh, like, I'm not crazy. There really might be something wrong here. But I'm also like, well, I don't know. Maybe it's not that bad. You know, he doesn't mean it. He doesn't realize it. But going back to the family, like, I realized how involved they get into things and like what goes down when you get on their bad side. And like, they were threatening her. They were saying what they're going to do to her if they get divorced. Basically like scared the shit out of her, threatening to take the kid. And from that point on, like, it was just never the same between, I guess, like her relationship and their relationship. And yeah, like I saw how like his family, I guess, like to defend him, but it's like overkill in a way. And the way that they do things is they bully you, like they're bullies, essentially. That's how his grandparents are. That's how his parents are. That's how he is. And they get their way by force, essentially, and intimidation. And it really like made me think like, oh my God, like if I have a kid with him and something happens, what are they going to do? Like, what am I going to do? So I kind of kept it in the back of my head because I was still kind of like in denial. Cause I'm like, well, maybe everything will just be fine. Like they're different than us. I've always heard things going on with them. They always seem to just be very toxic, just given what I was told from their side of things. So I don't really know what actually really went on. Cause I was never super close to her because yeah. but yeah, so that was a big eye opener with him and with his family. And I feel like that point on, I started to get more smart to things and really start to like think about things and be like, is this really a good idea? Trying to have a kid with him and even just being with him in general.
And you brought up the kid again, or the possibility of having a child. And, you know, eventually you're just not getting pregnant when you guys are trying. So you know, what happens from this point, because this point becomes, you know, I'm not going to say this is the beginning of the end, but this is where us, like, if you're going in the, you know, the heat starts to get turned on a big time here. If you were at 150 degrees Fahrenheit, all of a sudden you're at 350, 400 to 500 here.
So leading up to that point, like I was just starting to get very unhappy because like I was starting to realize what was really going on. Even before that point, things were starting to turn up even more. The fights got nastier. It got to the point where if we got into an argument, like he would just verbally just tear me down and I would just be in tears by the end of it, like almost every time. And I'm like, this isn't right. Like something's wrong here. Just starting to go after me over the smallest of things. Like if I didn't put gas in my car, if my gas tank got low and I had to go get gas, he would just lose it. Just little things and like just, you know, more nitpicking, all that kind of stuff, just really starting to bring my confidence down. I'm like questioning my capability of everything, like my job, being a wife, just being a person, if I can even be a good mom. He would flat out tell me I can't even complete the simplest of tasks. Like I'm just not capable of doing anything. He has to pull all the weight in our marriage. I don't do enough for either of us. Just never enough. And I'm so unhappy at this point. Like it was a really stressful time at work too. And I'm just kind of like over the edge. I started to get like suicidal. Like I was so depressed at that point. And I was like trying to figure out a way to tell him. But eventually one day, yeah, I was telling him how I felt. I was just like, look, like I'm seriously like, I'm like feeling suicidal here. Like I feel like I can't do anything right. Like I still kind of held back some details because I was already like a very difficult conversation and I was afraid of how he was going to react. And it still did not go well. He really didn't seem to care too much about, you know, me telling him I was depressed and I was feeling suicidal. He only cared that I was telling him I wasn't sure if I really wanted a baby or not. And, you know, he told me I was trying to screw up his life because I wasn't sure if I wanted a kid. And he knew the longer it took for us to have a baby, the further away he was getting from having one. This might be like, he might as well consider getting a divorce at this point, because this is a very big deal. He knows how important it is to him. I need to figure out whatever's wrong with me and get that done. But it's like, okay, if we're not going to have a kid, then how is this going to work? And like, I was so scared of getting divorced because I thought that was like one of the worst things you could do, that I was just like, what do I do? Like I'm already at a low point in my life and I might be the reason why my marriage falls apart. And like, I just couldn't handle it. So I was in therapy, like I was in contact with my therapist, like I kind of like pulled myself up from that super low place. And I was like, well, I want to keep him happy. So like, maybe I should still like try, but I also did bring up couples counseling to him because I'm like, the way that we fight and the way he talks to me just isn't right. And he was so angry when I brought up couples counseling to him, he was just livid and, you know, couldn't believe I would suggest there's anything wrong. Like I'm the one with the problem. Like all of our issues are because of me. Any problems we've ever had were because of me. He communicates just fine. You know, I'm the one that needs therapy. And, you know, I told him like, look, like I know how important it is to have a baby with you to have a baby. So like, I'll still try. And that kind of like placated him for a little bit, but only for so long. And then that's when things really started to like take off. He started to get like almost like obsessive of when I was ovulating, and we went through fertility treatments or testing per se to like figure out that something was wrong. They couldn't find anything. So they kind of told us what they suggested. And I was like, I don't think I really want to do that because it was invasive. But he kind of wanted me to do it, but he let it go after a little bit. But then he would start to tell me how I wasn't having sex with him enough. He would get so angry if I didn't initiate when he expected me to, or if we didn't do it as much as he thought we should. You know, there was one point where he told me if I didn't have sex with him that night, that one, I don't belong in this relationship, and two, I should just leave. And it just got to the point where he would be so angry and I would be so afraid of starting a fight with him that I started to just like give in. And like, I just wanted to get it over with. And I was just so tired of him fighting with me over it. But then like, I also, in that process, like I also felt like I kind of like lost some autonomy and like, I couldn't say no anymore. And I remember at one point I tried to tell him like, look, like, I feel like I just can't say no to you anymore. And he looked me in the face and told me to just stop saying no.
And I, you know, at this point, the person you were, I would say, is like officially, like, piece by piece by piece of you was taken away over time. And here is a moment where, like, all of you, you know, would be taken away. You know, you have a complete loss of autonomy at this point, of what's going on in your head, of your body, everything. And this person has systematically gone about this process, and it wasn't a 1-year process, 2-year process. I mean, this is a long term, you know, 3-4 years, you know, 5 years process of systematically breaking you down, that you have complete erosion of who you are and taking your autonomy away. If you had a child with this person, it would have just, if a waterfall didn't happen yet, that would be an even bigger waterfall moment of being trapped and being on the other end of this person. And the abuse from here, and I can see the, you know, you're shutting your eyes and I can see that it's this is difficult to think about, so I'll do my best here to not push.
No, it's okay.
But from here, you know, things do eventually get physical. So, you know, what happens from this point, and how do things get smoothed over after that?
So from that point, leading up to when it started to get physical, there's more fights. He started adding in threats to taking things away from me, or, you know, he would start to tell me what he would do if we got divorced, how he was going to take my dogs from me. He's going to take my house from me. He's going to make me worse off than before we got married. He's going to take all the money. Basically just like intimidating me into like staying at this point. And, you know, that was the first time that like divorce was like seriously discussed, and being like, okay, here's what's going to happen. Here's what I'm going to do to you if you leave me. And I was scared. And up until that point, I was just trying to do whatever I could to make him happy. But it just seemed like something kind of clicked inside of me that no matter what I do, he's not going to be happy. And I might have to seriously start thinking about this now. Like, I'm past to like being scared of it. It might become a reality at this point. And that was before things even got physical. So after that conversation where he started threatening me, we ended up going on this vacation that had been planned for like a year. Like, it was already planned for. It was a really big vacation I was looking forward to, and it was with his family. And I was like, I just need to get through this vacation, and afterwards I'll just figure everything out. You know, maybe this is what we need. It just needs to be like a reset for us or something. I don't know. I was just like kind of grasping at straws. And for the most part, it was fine until like the last couple of days. And he was just in a really bad mood. And whenever he's in a bad mood, you know, he would just take it all on me. And up until this point, you know, he he started calling me like a selfish bitch or like a stupid bitch, or like, you know, he'd start calling me names, you know, telling me I was ungrateful and selfish started to become very commonplace. Like almost every argument we had, that's what he would resort to. He would start just listing off everything that's wrong with me. And we got into our hotel room for the night and I was just like trying to think of ways to make him feel better. So I was like, look, like, I know you really wanted to do this one thing. Like, why don't we go do that tomorrow? And if anything, that just made him worse. And he started to get like so angry with me and started telling me how I'm so selfish. And I just about had it. And I started fighting back and told him, like, I'm so sick of hearing you telling me that I'm selfish. I'm so tired of hearing of it. Cause it's just like, it was like being drilled into me at this point, and got into this big yelling match. And we were supposed to go to dinner with his family. And like, you know, I was just so upset. I was like, I don't want to go to dinner. I just want to stay in the room. You're like, you can go. And he's like, no, if you don't go to dinner, you're just being selfish. And I'm just like, I can't win here. Like, I don't even know what to do. And I'm just like, I guess I have to go. But like, I was still trying to like, kind of like pull myself together because I was so upset. And we start walking to the restaurant with his family. And I'm really just trying like not to cry the entire time. Cause I'm like, I don't want to be here, but I feel like I have to. And I couldn't hold it together. You know, we were walking and his sister noticed that I was upset and she kind of like took me aside and kind of asked what was going on. And everything just came out. Like I kind of told her what had been going on the past few months. Like things weren't really good. Like we just got into a bad, really bad fight. You know, I'm just like, I'm really not happy right now. I don't know what to do. And she was kind of like, your feelings are valid. He should not talk to you like that. I know how he is and I support you whether you leave him or not. And she's like, I don't blame you if you leave him. And I think that was like my first real validation from someone outside of just me and maybe my therapist, that someone that's close to him is like confirming that, like, yeah, I know how he is. And I think it's okay if you divorce him. So he starts calling and texting us, asking us what's going on. And he comes out and finds us outside the restaurant and he's all pissed off. Like, he's like, you know, what are you doing? Cause he can see that I'm upset. And, he's like, we're going to go back to the room. And, I was like, oh my God, like, I really don't want to be alone with him, but I also don't want to be sitting there crying in a restaurant. So I was like, I don't really know what to do. But I felt like I had no choice. Like I had to go back to the room with him. And it just turned into this whole big thing. Like he was telling me I should leave. I should just go home the next day, you know, just turn into this hours long fight. And eventually like it got really late at night and I was just exhausted. Like I had been crying for hours and just fighting with him. And I was like, I just really want to go to sleep. Like, can we just talk about this tomorrow or something? He's like, no, we're going to figure this out right now. You can't go to sleep yet. And I was just exhausted. And eventually I was like, I need to get away from him. Like, I can't do this. If I can't sleep, then I can't be near him. So I like put my shoes on, put my jacket on, grabbed my phone. And he was kind of like, where are you going? And I was like, I'm going to go call my mom and go like walk around or something. And he's like, no, you're not. And I take my room key. I walk out the door and he just comes stomping after me. And he's like, get back in the room. You're causing a scene. Like his face is red. And I just like, I'm like, I can't get rid of him. Like, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, maybe I should just go back to the room. Cause like, I don't know what else to do. So I go back into the room with him. And as soon as the door closes, he like grabs me by the shoulders and kind of like shakes me and starts yelling in my face. And like, I was just sobbing at that point. Like I didn't know what to do. And I just felt trapped and like defeated. And like, there was no one there. Like I was on the other side of the country. So it's like, I couldn't even like have someone come get me or anything either. And, that was like the first time he ever like touched me during an argument. And like the next day he acted like everything was fine. You know, he tried to be extra nice to me, tell me he loved me, he was sorry, he'll go to counseling with me, like stuff like that, just trying to like smooth things over. And that was kind of like his go-to thing. Like he would expect me to just like his sorry was just good enough and I should just move on from it. So we, you know, we get back and at this point, both of our parents kind of know what's going on. Like I just, at one point, like I kind of like told my mom, like things weren't good. Like he had threatened to kick me out a couple times already or would tell me I should leave. And when I was kind of telling her some of the things that she didn't know about, she was just like, he sounds like a different person. Like, I can't believe he said those things or did those things. And she was just like surprised. Like, she's like, that's not the guy that I thought you were with. And it just came like a really big surprise to her. And at that point I was kind of like, okay, like we need to like at least try to go to counseling or like, I'm going to have to leave. Like, can't keep doing this. And that was before the physical stuff got even worse. He was very, very resistant to keeping up with it, I guess, at first. Like, he was like, we don't really need it. Basically just saying, like, all of our issues are because of me. I'm just trying to cause problems. You know, he's not doing anything wrong. You know, this is more for me. You know, maybe I need to get a new therapist. You know, I'm the one that has a problem. The usual kind of stuff. And yeah, so I left for the first time, maybe not even a month away from the vacation that he like grabbed me on. And I think it was like a couple nights before I left, we got into this really big argument and I called my parents to come over because I didn't think he was going to let me leave. So my parents came over, but then he asked his mom to come over. So it became like this whole big thing, which is like, I was just trying to leave, but I ended up not leaving that night. It was a couple nights later. And I also, that was like another big thing where I realized how similar he is to his mom and how, where he learned to fight dirty. And, you know, she was kind of like, she was trying to be like a mediator almost and kind of talk about what was wrong and what was going on. And I was trying to tell her, look, like, you know, he's telling me I'm this bitch. Like he keeps saying like, I'm causing all the issues. Like, you know, just talking about some of the things that had happened. And then, you know, he would kind of like talk in circles and he wouldn't really give straight answers when like my dad like went after him and said like, why did you call her a stupid bitch? Like, that's unacceptable. And he like couldn't give him an answer. He kind of like stumbled over his words. And, you know, my parents were trying to talk to him and trying to be like, why are you treating her this way? And, you know, his mom, I mean, I realized after the fact, but I think when the focus was getting too much on him, she was like, well, let's talk about why he doesn't want to have a baby. And it was just totally out of left field. And I was just so like caught off guard. I was like, this isn't relevant to anything. Like, I don't want to have a baby because we're having issues. Like, why do I need to talk about why I don't want to have a kid? It's pretty obvious. And, you know, she started saying how I knew how important it was for him to have a kid and I'm taking that away from him. And there's something wrong with me. I'm leading him on and I'm kind of just like, what is going on here? Like, this was supposed to be kind of like, it was supposed to be productive and be kind of a group thing. And now it's turning into like an interrogation of me of why I don't want to do something with my own body and my choices. And I just like, you know, I mean, that night, like everyone kind of left. And I remember saying like, look, like I don't want to have one right now. I want to go back on birth control because I can't do this with him. Like I want to go to couples counseling. Like I want to change things before I think we can even have a kid. And everyone was like, yeah, that sounds reasonable. But he didn't not agree to it. But then he also kind of agreed to it. Like he didn't really give a straight answer, but I was kind of just like, whatever. And then, you know, the next couple of days, just more fighting. And like, I was just exhausted at that point. Like, it was just the same thing over and over again, just him like berating me, saying how like, I'm not trying hard enough. And eventually the day I left, I was like, look, you can't tell me what to do. If I want to go on birth control, I'm going to go on birth control. And he absolutely lost it. He was like, how dare you? Like, I can't believe you. You know how important it is for me. But I was like, you can't tell me what to do. I'm going to go back on it. And then he told me to leave the house. And I was like, fine. You know what? Thank you. Because I wanted to anyway. Like, I packed up all my stuff. And I told my mom I'm coming over. And I wanted to take one of my dogs with me because we had like an unofficial agreement that if something happened to us, he would take the dog that his parents gifted us and I would take the dog we adopted with each other. And at this point, I'm thinking like, this is it. Like, I'm not doing this. If I'm leaving, I'm leaving for good. So I tried to take my dog with me and he physically pulled her from me and wouldn't let me take her. And I was just devastated. But I was like, I have to leave. Like, I have to get out of the house. So that night he calls me trying to tell me he's sorry. He wants me to come back. He shouldn't have kicked me out and tell him I'm not coming back. Like, you're the one that wanted me to leave or told me to leave. So I'm not going to come back just because you're asking me to. He like keeps trying to talk to me and, you know, he like has this conversation with me saying like, he's going to change, like he'll go to therapy with me. Like, it's okay if I want to go on birth control, it's okay. You know, whatever, like started to like kind of tell me what I wanted to hear. So I go back like the following weekend, he's trying to make it up to me and stuff like that. But then I come back and then that's when he starts like trying to strangle me and stuff like that. And his jokes get a good little more aggressive. Like, he made a joke about marital rape when I wouldn't have sex with him. And I'm kind of just like, what's wrong with you? Like, why would you even say that? And he just totally played it off saying like, it was just a joke. You know, like we would just be like sitting on the couch or something and he would reach over and just grab my neck and squeeze. And like the one time he did it, like, he just kept squeezing harder and harder until it was like, I could like feel the blood in my head and like, it was getting hard to breathe. And I was just like, what's going on right now? And like, I was like starting to get nervous because like, he wouldn't let go even when I told him to like let go. And he finally did. And I immediately just got off the couch and just like walked away from him. And I was in shock because I was like, what was that? Like, that was just so out of nowhere. And that would happen a few times before I like left for good. And the fights got worse. Like, it started to become almost, I wouldn't say daily, but like pretty often that it would literally be the same thing every single time. I'm not trying hard enough. You know, this is my fault. Like, we don't really need therapy, you know, basically going back on everything he said. And, you know, I remember one night, we were just like in bed and he wanted me to get up and go do something. And I said, no, like you go do it. And kind of just like, you know, pushing back. And all of a sudden he just smacks me. And I like immediately jump out of bed because I'm just like, one, that really hurt. And two, it was just out of nowhere. And I'm just like what just happened? Like, he just hit me. And I was just like kind of in shock. And I told him to apologize. I was like, that hurt and you should apologize to me. And he just refused. Like, he just told me I was being too sensitive, you know, don't hold my breath because he's not going to apologize for it. But I just kept telling him, I was like, you should apologize to me right now. And eventually he did, but it was kind of like a forced apology. So it wasn't genuine. And that same night, he took a pillow and put it over my face and pressed down and told me he wants to smother me sometimes. And I kind of just, you know, laughed it off, but I'm kind of just like, what the hell? It just, I don't know. It just went from like 0 to 60 within just like a couple months.
You're in a lot of these instances that are happening, you know, you're in shock and you freeze. In a lot of these cases, and you've been laughing a lot during our talk today, but now this is the first time you have tears in your eyes.
Yeah, I think it's because it's so crazy to think about that it even happened. And then I start to realize how screwed up it was. And then that's when it starts to like kind of like hit me that it's just like one, I thought I was crazy the entire time. I thought I really was the problem. I thought like I just had to do enough, even though it was never enough. And like I was so stressed out. Like I had to start calling out of work because I would get so upset after one of our fights or something. And there would be weeks where I would be sitting in my office and I was like almost obsessing over it. Like I couldn't do any of my work because I was so worried about how I would fix my marriage. And like, I couldn't get anything done. And I spent so much time obsessing over it And like, I didn't even realize how bad it really was until after I got away from it, even though I knew it was bad, but it's like hindsight is 20/20. And it's like, I was actually able to process it more after the fact. And now it's like, oh my God, that actually happened. Yeah. And I think it's just like, it's all kind of like starting to like hit me at once in a way.
So you're eventually separated for a bit of time and you go to live with your parents. So what happens from here?
You know, probably we still tried to go to couples counseling. We were separated for maybe like, I don't know, a month and a half. I was living with my parents, but like I still was hanging on to be like, I was still hanging on for some reason, even though I knew it was done. I think I was already kind of like checking myself out, but I was at this point, I was scared of what was going to happen, like scared of the unknown. Like if I really do divorce him, what's he going to do? Is he going to take my dog from me? Is he going to take all my money from me? I don't know. But eventually I would go see him on the weekends, never got any better, constantly arguing with me. And then just like one day I was just like, I can't do it. Like I need to get a divorce from him. I can't do this anymore. Like, it's just like something like finally snapped inside of me, like one final time. And I was like, I can't do it. And so I called him on the phone because I knew if I did it in person, he was going to try to talk me out of it. And I was like, I need to get a divorce. Like, I need to divorce you. Like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I literally have nothing left. Like, I can't do it. And, you know, he just went into this whole little tirade. I should never get into another relationship or marriage again because obviously I can't handle marriage. And I was kind of like I just sobbed afterwards, but I also like felt like there was like a weight off my chest because I was like, oh my God, like I finally did it. And after that, I mean, he just getting to the point where we could file was just a nightmare. Like he just made it as difficult as he possibly could. You know, at one point he told me he was going to go scorched earth on me. He was going to take me to court over everything and drag it out and drain me of all my money. Like just threats here and there. You know, his mom got involved and, you know, she was also just being really nasty towards me. And eventually it got so bad that I just went no contact and everything just started to go through our lawyers. And that's when I was really able to start to like realize that was when I was able to really start processing what really happened and how bad it actually was. It was incredibly stressful, but like I knew I made the right decision in the end of ending things and going no contact.
And how has your healing process been in the aftermath of everything?
There's definitely still things that like I'm still, you know, processing through, I guess, or whatever, but it's definitely gotten a lot easier. Like I'm not really like doubting myself, like thinking back on the things that he would say, like I'm like regaining my confidence in myself. Like, you know, I realized that like the entire time we were together, I thought I was the problem, but now that I'm out of it, it was like, there was nothing wrong with me. Like the whole idea was that he wanted to make it seem like there was something wrong with me and I was crazy and, you know, I'm just causing problems. And now it's like, oh, like there wasn't actually something wrong with me. I'm starting to comprehend like how lucky I got, as well as that, like I got out before the physicalness got even worse, or I got out before I even got pregnant. I mean, I'm so lucky that I did not have a kid with him. And like, I can't even imagine what that would have been like. I don't know if I ever would have been able to leave if I did, because I think I would have just been too scared of him and his family and just having to deal with them for the rest of my life, even if we did divorce. And like, there were definitely things that would like pop into my head over time where it was like, okay, like, I feel like I'm doing a little better, but then I would think of something and then it would kind of like knock me down again. And then I'd kind of like have to like deal with that, like different realizations that I've had that, you know, like when I first met him, I thought he was this very secure, like, you know, very outgoing person, like very sure of himself. And no, it's actually the opposite. He's actually very insecure. And he felt like he had to bully the person that he was supposed to love to make himself feel better and to control. So he has some semblance of control. And it's like, it's kind of sad that that's what he thinks he needs to do. And, you know, this like really awful thing happened to me, but like I was able to still make really hard decisions and do really hard things and still get out on the other side of it and get really lucky and get away from it. Almost unscathed. Like, I'm very lucky that it wasn't worse in a way or didn't become more complicated.
And if you had any words of wisdom for everyone listening, what would they be?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of something that's like not like super corny. I mean, honestly, like I feel like your body and your intuition knows long before your brain is going to catch up and realize what's really going on. I knew deep down something was really wrong, but my mind was telling me otherwise because it was being conditioned to. And that's how I grew up. Like I was always like second guessing myself. And I feel like it's kind of like, you know, you have to go with your gut feeling. And like, if you think something's wrong, it probably is. You know, it was like, this was probably one of the hardest things I absolutely had to do. But even though it's something that's really hard, it can still be the right decision, even though it feels really hard. And, you know, you don't know what you're capable of. Like I never would have thought I would have been able to do what I did and stand up for myself. And I think it's like, you have to stand your ground no matter what, even though you're scared, because I was terrified and I was still able to get myself over that hump because I loved myself enough to be able to do what was best for me. I think that's about it.
Well, Blue, I really want to thank you for being here with me today and sharing your story. And you did a really good job of being really clear on all of the escalation points. But, you know, when we're telling stories that are specifically the, you know, the frog in the boiling pot type stories, you know, you just did a really good job of really showcasing how slow it could be. I mean, your story is a really good example of the slowness of it and how the erosion of you is happening, but that person you were with was scary. I mean, you started off with like nitpicking for the first year and something most people wouldn't think of as being abuse, as we mentioned earlier. And by the end of it, this person had their hands on your neck and was putting a pillow over your face. And it got to this physicalness that slowly over time, as your parent said, like, this doesn't sound like the person you told us about. Completely different. And it wasn't really quick. And, you know, it's hard, so hard to leave. And no matter what type of abuse is going on, because there's a myriad of reasons, but when you're in this type of one where, you know, the vision of this person from the beginning to eventually what they become and the slow manipulation of you, which happened, it becomes so difficult after that many years. And if you had a child, it would have made it even more difficult to leave. And I'm just happy you're here and you're lucky. In my opinion, you're lucky to be alive. Once, you know, people say like, once your hands are on your neck, you know, the next step is something, you know, even worse. So I'm happy you're here to tell your story, share your experience, your feelings, let out some of your feelings. And, you know, hopefully this helped you process a lot that happened. Or at least was beneficial in that way. And hopefully everyone who's listening, I know it's going to help so many people just listening to everything that happened. And I know that was a big thing for you today. So just a really big thank you for being here with us today.
Yeah. I mean, the main goal for me for doing this was not just for myself, but like hoping that at least one person is going to hear it and it's going to help them realize because that's what I needed. And everyone's experience is so different that, you know, it's, you need some kind of validation, be like, oh, that kind of sounds like me. And even just that little bit can go a long way.
Well, thank you, Blue, once again for being our guest today. And if you want to be a guest like Blue was today, please go to our website at narcissistapocalypse.com. Top of the page, there's a button that says guest form. When you click on that button, it takes you to our guest form page. And there you can read all of our instructions and either send us an email at narcissistapocalypse@gmail.com or fill out our guest form and press the submit button. And please do send it in the format that we ask for. Also, at our website, we have a support group. So if you need support, go to narcissistapocalypse.com, press the support group button at the top of the page, and inside you'll see that we have Zoom meetings every Wednesday night, Thursday afternoons, and Saturday nights. We have forum boards for you to post on to get the validation that you need from survivors just like you. It is a wonderful group of people on there, and you could just make a lot of friends too. So if you need support, join our support group today. And we have friends of the show called Shelter Movers, everyone. So sheltermovers.com is where you can find them. And what they do is they help you move all of your stuff from your home into storage. And that includes your pets and livestock, too. So if you're trying to get out of domestic violence and coercive of control and you need help leaving the home, getting all of your stuff out of your home, sheltermovers.com can help you get all of your stuff into storage. And that includes your pets and livestock, too. It is currently only in Canada, but it is a donor-supported charitable organization. So if you need help from them, or if you just want to donate to them, go to sheltermovers.com. And if you need even more support, please do visit our friends at domesticshelters.org. At domesticshelters.org, they have articles and resources to help you make sense of what you're dealing with. They have every phone number, email address, and web address for shelters and agencies, no matter how big or small the town you're in. Domesticshelters.org has it there. So if you need extra support, please do go to domesticshelters.org. And that is it for today's survivor story, today's episode. So for myself and Blue, we hope you have a good night.